Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Elemental Awakening podcast. Today, I have a very special guest, Mr. Ben Pakulski, also known as the Bodybuilding Yogi. He's an entrepreneur, dad, overall awesome guy. He's got a great following on YouTube, inspiring many, many people to make changes in their life. Ben, welcome to the show.
Giovanni, it's great to be here, man. Obviously, great fan of you and super excited to chat.
Yeah, so I was introduced to Ben not too long ago through a mutual friend. And he's like, yeah, you got to meet this guy. And I said, sure, I love meeting new, interesting people. And, he mentioned to me he wasn't expecting much of the meeting, and the same sort of was me. I wasn't really sure what to expect. And immediately I saw, like, wow, this guy's really super interesting, very inspiring as well, also a dad. So I was like, you know, definitely someone I look up to as far as like how he's putting himself out there. So I just wanted to bring him on the show to just share some of that level of like honest with you guys.
Thank you very much, man. I appreciate that.
So let's just start with the name, the Bodybuilding Yogi. Give me a little bit about where that came from. What's the story behind that name? I love it.
Well, so at 15 years old, I found exercise. So I grew up in a family of overweight alcoholics. And I too was not an alcoholic at that point, but I was definitely overweight. I was an obese kid. And at 15 years old, I found exercise and was absolutely obsessed and hooked and became a professional bodybuilder by the age of 26. Because I think it's what gave me fulfillment. It's what gave me significance. And I set the goal at 17 years old. I said, I'm going to be the best in the world at this, and I'm not going to stop until I am. And everyone said I couldn't do it, yet I didn't even have another option in my mind. There's, I burned the boats, and had a relatively successful career as a professional bodybuilder. I finished second at the Arnold Classic, being my best placing, which is the second biggest show in the world. I did the Mr. Olympia contest twice, which is the biggest contest in the world. Didn't do extremely well at those contests, but, top 12 both times. So, to be top 12 in the world is pretty exceptional for a little kid from small town outside of Toronto or just outside of Toronto. So, and then again, point being, I set this goal at 17 to be Mr. Olympia because I thought that's what it would take to make me happy or fulfilled. And I remember clear as day walking on stage at the Olympia and feeling a sense of accomplishment, but feeling also at the same time a sense of emptiness because, when I thought I would fulfill all of my wildest dreams, I realized that it was empty. It was lonely. I had burned a lot of bridges. I had been so focused on just myself. I'd been very selfish. So, that little moment. So a lot of things happened between 2012 and 13 for me, including my son being born in 2012, my daughter being born in 2013, and my first competition at the Mr. Olympia contest in 2012. And that kind of accumulation of events just set me on this path of introspection, realizing that no amount of money, I'd made decent money at that time. I accomplished decent things in bodybuilding. And none of those things fulfilled me. I still felt empty, but the things that did fulfill me, being with my kids was fulfilling to me. And then exploring this internal journey was what really became interesting to me. So it took me a few years to unwind my bodybuilding career because I had my claws pretty deeply wound into it. And I took about 3 years to pull away. But when I did, I took about 18 months and basically stopped training altogether. I don't say if I went quite vegan, but I was very low meat and spent a lot of time spiritually, right? It's a lot of time meditating, some medicines, some spiritual medicines, just some exploration. Cause I was just like, man, I accomplished what I thought would be fulfilling to me. I accomplished what I thought I wanted to do in my life and it didn't do anything for me. It didn't make me even happy. So, I built a lot of traits along the way, I became more confident. I built some character, I certainly built discipline, but it still wasn't what I wanted to. So now I realize, the way I explained it is I went from shining the light on things outside of myself as being the focus to now shining the light inside of myself. And that's where this bodybuilding yogi thing came from is I tend to be someone who turns people, internally rather than externally for fulfillment. And, I love it. I think I found my calling is to use this external body that I created to create maybe some notoriety, maybe some credibility with people, and then take them and teach them like, hey, I've been to the highest level of this. It's just like making millions of dollars. It's like, I want to make millions of dollars because I think it's going to make me happy. Like, oh, that didn't make me happy at all. I'm still the same insecure, unhappy person I was. So I want everyone to realize that. And I'm not against the journey, but it's more about realizing the value is the journey, right? It's not the end destination. So how do you become somebody stronger in the process? So just to sum up this one last statement is, don't set the goal to make $1 million for the money. Set the goal for the person it makes of you to achieve it. And that's a quote from Jim Rohn, who you may or may not know, but Jim Rohn is an incredible, unfortunately passed away, a brilliant man. And that's kind of what it is, man. So we're helping people, inspiring people to shine the light inside.
And you do that through your podcast and through your social media. Is that how you're doing it, and courses and stuff like that? So yeah. Like, just maybe take me a bit along that journey of how you started sharing it from bodybuilding into like a social media sort of.
So 2011, my girlfriend at the time, now wife, got pregnant, and I was one of my clients at the time, hired me and said, you know, hey man, I'm getting ready for the world championships, like physique thing. And, you know, got him in the best shape of his life. And he goes, man, you do this so differently than everybody else. You should teach this to the world. So because my girlfriend was pregnant, I was like, man, I need another stream of income just in case bodybuilding tends to disappear. Cause you know, one injury or one bad placement, you're done. So I started, and I started teaching, and, you know, I studied muscle building extensively in very different paths than other people. So 2011, I launched my first online program, which is basically teaching people everything I knew about muscle building. It was called MI40, Muscle Intelligence Number 40, based around 40 days of workouts and 40 minute workouts. And we launched it, and we did very, very well. And we realized there was a need for it. And I did no marketing, and we had huge word of mouth marketing, just tons of organic marketing. So that was 2011, we launched that. 2014, you know, after my bodybuilding career kind of unwinded, or started on one, everyone's like, hey, what do I do now? Right? We spent so much time pushing in this first program. Like, what do I do now? So we built another one. And that kind of evolved into teaching and loving teaching. So now I get to travel the world teaching people exercise, which has now evolved into exercise plus wellness, plus longevity, plus spirituality. You know what I call my six pillars, and I'll get into those if you like. But
What that looks like.
Just to wrap up what I'm doing now. As you said, podcast, it's traveling to teach. I build courses as well, teaching personal trainers how effective transformation strategies. So I call it a framework for rapid results. I guess online, I do some mentoring of coaches as well. So it's a lot of fun, and do some one-to-one coaching of high-end executives and entrepreneurs.
Just to ask you a question before you go into six pillars. So like, at what point did you realize, like you said, you felt unfulfilled when you reached the top? Was there like a moment that you knew like, oh, wait a minute, I'm supposed to be teaching or supposed to be in service? Was there something like that made it clear? Because you talked about going a bit of a spiritual journey. When did you make that flip into your calling?
Was there? Yeah. So 2012, going to the Olympia stage, I knew it wasn't, it's not like, so my original plan, man, like, I was going to do the Olympia 10 years in a row. And I was like, I'm going to keep doing this till I win. And after having done it, I was like, well, you know, I don't know if this is it. And then around 2013, after my daughter was born, I say, you know, my kids are my angels because they literally probably saved my life. I just started questioning my purpose. Like in the past, I'd go to the gym and I would have this undoubtable, relentless passion and purpose. Like there was nobody that was going to pull me away from this objective. And that was my gift, right? My myopic ability to block out the world and just focus on one thing was my greatest blessing in life. And also ironically, my greatest curse, right? So when I realized I no longer had that purpose, I started just looking, I started seeking, and I was like, what is it? And you know, I'd been a meditator for quite some time because I had so much trauma from my youth and so much pain. It was the only way for me to get to stop my brain. And I was very blessed to have one amazing coach who said, hey man, you can control this. You're the creator of this thing and you can change it. And some calling, actually, there was one particular event where I was like, I know what I want to do. Dr. Wayne Dyer, if you know who Dr. Wayne Dyer is. Mm-hmm. So when I first moved to California in 2011, maybe 2010, I think it was 2010 or 11, doesn't matter. So my first day in California, I'd been there many, many times and I go spend a few months at a time, but this time I was kind of moving indefinitely to pursue bodybuilding. And, you know, so every day, so I'd been there at that time, say 20 times in my life. And every time I'd go there, I'd do the exact same thing. I'd either take a cab or an Uber or a rental, and I would drive to the restaurant that I would always eat at. And then I would go to the gym. I took the same path all the time, did the same thing. You know, it was like, you know, Groundhog Day. Mm-hmm. This time, for whatever, and I took a different direction, and I ended up driving past the Santa Monica Civic Auditorium, and I saw appearing live tonight, Dr. Wayne Dyer. And I just finished reading his books. I was like, man, I got to go. So I ended up getting there.
Synchronicity. It's just like
so much more than, you know, let me tell you. So I walk in and I'm late. I'm like maybe 5-10 minutes late, and he hadn't started yet, or maybe it just was beginning. And I got the very last seat in the auditorium, like back left corner. And I walk in, him and his daughter are singing this beautiful duet. And then they ended up walking around while they're singing and standing right beside me. And I just saw, I could feel the connection between them. I had never felt the connection with any other human being in my life like that, including my parents, including anybody. This is pre-kids. And that was the first time in my life that I realized what true love was. Like, I'd never seen it before. I didn't know what it was. So I felt that. And at that moment, I was like, man, I want that between myself and my daughter. Unfortunately, Dr. Wayne Dyer has passed away, but I've been able to connect with his daughter, and her name is Sky. And I said, Sky, you know what? Like, you inspire me more than you know. You probably were a contributing factor in saving my life because I was so focused on this destructive habit of bodybuilding. Although I did it in a healthy way, you know, it can't be constructive to walk around at 310 pounds. So I've been connected with her. I named my daughter after her because of that connection. And now my daughter is 7 years old, man. And we have the most incredible bond and the most incredible relationship. She's my life and she knows it. And she's the most wonderful human being that I know, just an incredible heart. And I feel blessed to have her in my life. So it's been a big shift since I first got to meet Dr. Wayne Dyer. And he kind of set me on the path of this journey.
Yeah, and it's like those things, it's like, it's not a coincidence. It's like it had to happen that way. And you know, like people can like intellectually understand like, oh, like a connection, yeah, them singing together. But it's different when you get that feeling. It's like there's more of a knowing. Yeah. It's like it's beyond the mind. It's like, wow, like there's something there. And I feel similar ways like on a breathwork experience or like in ayahuasca or plant medicine. It's way beyond the mind because the mind tries to analyze and figure out like logically, yeah, that makes sense. Or you can read the scripture, any philosophy. It's like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. Right. But then you have an experience and it's like, okay. Now it's very clear. There's no
I stopped trying to think, man. Like I've got to the point now where, you know, I just stopped trying to think and I try to just experience. I try to feel, right? Your body's telling you everything you need to know. And I think a lot of people don't get to experience that in their life. And again, I don't claim to be some advanced spiritual person yet, but certainly on my journey.
On your journey. Cool. Tell me about the six pillars and where those came from. And then I got a bunch of questions, a bit all over the place, but we'll jump around.
So most people, when they start into trying to transform their physique, really focus on one or two things. Like I got to train and I got to eat, right? Like those are like everyone's nutrition's everything or training's everything. And both of them are relevant, but it's not everything, right? There's many things that can go into it. So if you think about this, and this is, you know, incredibly simple, but apparent when you think about it, there's only six things you can do as a human being, six things you can influence. So I can influence how I move, how I eat, how I think, how I breathe, how I sleep. That's five. And the sixth one is the environment in which you do them all. That's all you can influence. So those are my six pillars. So I'm like, okay, how do I, and again, so it's kind of an extrapolation of that. So it's training and nutrition and stress management, which is kind of breath and mindset mastery and sleep and the environment. So those are my six pillars. I'm like, okay, so which one of these is your limitation right now? So if I'm trying to change somebody's physique, hey, training may be one that we should go after. That's great. But maybe it's not. Maybe it's stress management. Maybe it's mindset. Maybe it's your environment. All of those things are massive influences on your internal state, right? And people don't realize that your internal state expresses as an external reality. So my internal state creates the body on the outside. So if I'm healthy and vibrant on the inside, I'm going to be healthy and vibrant on the outside. So the aspiration is, how do we start by laying this foundation of health, of, you know, working on these six pillars so that everything inside of our body starts to express externally in a healthy, vibrant way that we ultimately like to look at. It's not inflamed. It's not tired. It's not all saggy. It's like, hey, this body actually looks vibrant and resilient and you know, young and youthful.
Is there like a hierarchy of the pillars, like the hierarchy of needs or like Maslow's? Is there one that you'd say is like, you'd say like, hey, this is, well, if you're going to focus on one, really start here and then work your way down.
You know, I think it could be for anybody. Like, so, but you I mean, everyone realizes that. So if I was to say three that are maybe most important, it's not going to be nutrition. Most people think nutrition is top of the pole, but I would say sleep, stress, and movement, right? Because, you know, the human mind has evolved because of complex movement. Like that's why we have the brain that we do. And it's something as simple as the way my face moves, the way my jaw moves and speaking and breathing all that are orchestrated by the brain. So movement's a big piece, but you know, stress management and sleep, because you know, what I'll often say to people, the example I use is you can eat a chicken breast and broccoli and I can eat a chicken breast and broccoli. You're in a really calm parasympathetic state. I'm really anxious and stressed. Those are doing completely different things when they enter our bodies. We're eating the same thing on the outside, but on the inside, it's a completely different result. So it's not just about nutrition. It's about what your body does with the nutrition that you eat, right? So I have to be conscious of, you know, am I in a calm, relaxed state? Is my body willing and ready to take this food? Or am I trying to jam a bunch of food into a nervous system that's, you know, running, fighting the lion? So you have to be hyper aware of that stuff. So again, I would put those really high up in the list. And again, obviously your environment's massive because, I mean, people aren't aware of that either. But again, it could be any, to be honest.
Could be any. Cool. You mentioned a little bit earlier, you went almost vegetarian for a year. Was there any specific reason you did that? Was it just trying it out? And well, what did you notice when you did that?
I was trying to lose muscle, to be honest. And there's not many people on the planet who could say, I'm intentionally trying to lose muscle. But I mean, I was 300 pounds lean. Like I was 6% body fat. And I was like, okay, what is my best path to losing this? And so I think I went from about 310 to about 255 in about 18 months.
Okay.
So that's
a pretty big jump.
Yeah. Like, you know, good amount of weight. So like 55 pounds in 18 months. And that was just, man, lots of walking, a lot of yoga, not a lot of training. I probably trained twice a week, maybe, and relatively light, really just focusing on like, make sure my body was moving well. I think training is a really, you know, my belief is training is one of the best opportunities to improve mobility. Like people say, oh, you get tight from training. Not if you're doing it correctly. If you're doing it correctly, you actually improve mobility. So again, I kept it in a couple times a week just so I can maintain strong joints and strong, strong bones and good mobility. I found it contributed well to yoga. That was it, man. Like that was my shift.
And how much do you work out now? Is it working out still a very core part of your daily routine?
It kind of pulls me back in, ironically. So obviously my business is teaching people muscle building. So people, what you don't want when you walk into a classroom to go, people go, oh, what happened to you? So again, I try to maintain a lean, healthy and muscular body. That's kind of my thing is like lean, healthy, muscular, right? I don't want to just be jacked and huge. I want to be lean. I want to be healthy. I want to be muscular. And my thing now that I'm doing, which is unique, is trying to do it in a sustainable way that I can do it. Not just like, hey, I want to get in shape once and be in shape. I want to do it in the most sustainable way possible. So it's high impact habits. But so how much do I train now? Probably 3 to 4 days a week. It keeps pulling me back in, like I say. So I was 255 and well on my way down, I was the lightest I'd been in a long time. And this guy calls me up and he goes, hey man, I want you to train me for the Mr. Olympic contest. And amazing bodybuilder, one of the best in the world. And he goes, would you mind training me? And I was like, he goes, you know, can I ask nicely? And I was like, sure, let's do it.
It's all took asking nicely.
Well, yeah. So it took, lots, sometimes, right? Yeah. And guy had a good energy. So I was like, yeah, let's do it, man. So we did a 17 week contest prep. And the first 5 weeks, I went from 255 to 280 just by going, just from going training twice a week to training five times a week. My body just responded. So that kind of pulled me back in. And then I kind of always just kind of go, and man, I enjoy what I do now, because when I was training I was competing, my paradigm around exercise was that I had to do it. And I didn't necessarily enjoy it anymore, but now I love it, man. Like I love going in there and doing it because it's discipline, doing it because it's challenging, do it because it's intentionally curating obstacles. It's intentionally going after my weaknesses. And I believe for most people that don't meditate, this isn't maybe you as an example, because you're such an avid meditator, but for people that don't meditate, if you're already exercise may be the greatest opportunity you have in a day to ultimately become mindful if you're doing it correctly. So the way I advocate exercise, it's a mindful approach to contracting muscles against resistance. It's not moving weights. It's not moving load. It's mindfully contracting muscle against load, right? So I'm in there with my eyes closed, contracting, connecting, feeling, trying to challenge muscles. I'm not just trying to do an exercise, right? I'm trying to connect with what's happening inside of my body, and that expresses as challenge. And then I can start exploring, well, what happens when it gets hard? What does your unconscious mind want to do when something starts to get difficult? Do you want to run away? Do you want to lean in? Like, you can train that and how that applies in your life, right? So in life, if I'm sitting down to do work or if I'm sitting to do something hard, well, I want to train my body to feel the discomfort and lean in, rather than, oh, that's a little uncomfortable, I'm gonna back up. No, I wanna lean in. So when I feel something that's difficult, I smile a little further. Let's explore this. So it's a curiosity-based thing. My brain is getting excited. It's like the slot machine going off because I'm not quite sure what's gonna happen next. It's this anticipatory dopamine response I'm getting. I just said, oh, this is really exciting. And now I love it. Whereas in the past, and most people, what they're doing is like, oh, this kind of sucks. It really hurts. I don't really like exercising. It kind of hurts my joints, hurts my muscles. Awesome. Maybe we can find one that doesn't do that and allows you to actually explore challenge, allows you to explore discipline, allows you to explore the things that maybe in the past you didn't really like all that much. It's interesting.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I just started working out again because I felt like that was one aspect of my life that I wasn't just pushing myself into that discomfort. You know, I'd go for a light jog here and there. And before I was very athletic, my teens had worked out, I played sports. And, you know, this time around, it was like when I'd feel like my thighs burning because I'm like really pushing it, like, you know, doing sprints or up the hill, I'd be like, yes, you know, this is the feeling of growth rather than, oh, I should slow down, this is uncomfortable. I do a lot of breathwork training when I'm running or pushing myself. And it's the most uncomfortable thing, like building up your CO2 tolerance past that sort of threshold. It's like, oh, I need to like breathe. It's right. Like, no, you're training yourself. You're pushing that level. So like lean into it. And what I want to ask you your opinion on is like, what's the minimum effective dose to get like a sexy dad bod? So I'm not looking to be at Mr. Olympia, sure. You know, just some muscular definition, you know, like not feel guilty having a beer or two on the weekend.
That's kind of what everyone wants, right?
Yeah.
So again, it has to be a dynamic thing for you, Gio. So here's the way I frame this for everybody. So there's three kind of training that you want, three types of training, three modules, I guess, that you want to incorporate. Strength and hypertrophy, so resistance training. Mobility and stability, which for me is yoga, and then something that's anaerobic or aerobic, right? So it could be running, it could be walking, it could be cycling, whatever. So you need to have all three of those, call them pillars. Now, the dynamic balance of how much of each is completely up to you. So for me right now, it's one day is going to be strength training, the next day is going to be yoga and endurance work, and I just alternate back and forth. And if I feel like, hey, I kind of want to do more of this one, maybe I have a goal in mind, like I want to climb Kilimanjaro or something. Okay, well, I'm gonna lean away from the hypertrophy stuff. It's still gonna be there, just a little less often. And we change the relative ratios. That's it. So I think keeping a dynamic balance, because to thrive as a human being, to be empowered as a human being, you wanna have all these different exposures. Because man, I don't wanna end up in a scenario where I'm not able to do something, right? Mm-hmm. I don't have the cardiovascular endurance. I don't have the mobility, or I feel really tight all the time, or I don't have the strength. Mm-hmm. Like all of those are very real things in life, man. I wanna be the ultimate Renaissance man. I wanna be able to do anything at any time. And am I there yet? No, but I'm working on it.
So would you say like from a duration perspective, because for me, it's like working out. I don't totally enjoy it, but I appreciate it. So I'm trying to do like a Tabata 3 times a week. So like 7 minutes, 8 minutes of like high intensity, maybe like a 15, 20 minute jog once a week in there. And then like 1 or 2 days, I'll do like a very slow sort of push and pull type thing. Again, I'm trying to keep all of them under 20 minutes. I don't know if that's enough. I'm feeling like I'm getting stronger.
Well, for now it is. So here's the way to look at it, man. So if you could put in 3 boxes, you've got beginner, intermediate, advanced. If you're a beginner, 20 minutes is going to be enough forever. And you can keep yourself as a beginner for the rest of time, and your body will always respond in the way that a beginner does. Mm-hmm. If you start pushing the amount of work up, then your body becomes less adaptive to that small amount of stimulus. So you need more. And, you know, so when I was a competitive bodybuilder, there was times when I would train 5 to 6 hours a day. And my body needed that to grow and respond and look the way I wanted to. Now I can get away with 40 to 60 minutes. Usually, like I'll do yoga for an hour. I'll do training for 40 to 60 minutes, 3 times a week. And I feel great. I'm often getting stronger. My goal is being strong, not necessarily being big. So that's it, man. Again, it's completely dependent on you.
So I got a few questions around that. I actually like recently started listening to Dr. Zach Bush. I know you've had him on your show.
Awesome.
And I was listening to him on Paul Check, and then I'm like, you know, I want to listen to one of Ben's episodes before, you know, we have this call, because I haven't really listened. I'm only listening to a couple of your episodes, and it was from 2017, but it was the first one top of the list. I said, okay, like that's just a sign. Let me watch that. And there's a few very fascinating things you guys talked about. I haven't finished it yet; I'm about halfway through. But one of them was like longevity and bodybuilding, and some of the stats he talked about is like actually not living as long for like real bodybuilders.
No doubt.
And I guess what's your experience with that? What do you think? And, you know, is it something that bodybuilders should be really concerned about? Like for me, I'm all about longevity, feeling good and living long. That's sort of what I'm going for. What are your thoughts on that? And what recommendations?
And so, you know, I talked to a lot of experts on this stuff. The longevity stuff is real. And his explanation, as far as I remember, you're pushing mTOR pathway. You're also pushing growth factors like IGF, et cetera, which, you know, can be predisposing you to cancer and things like this. And ultimately aging, a lot of oxygen-free radicals. I'll say the other side of that. Then I have experts who say it doesn't matter. mTOR is not, for the rest of your life, you want mTOR. You want to maintain muscle because muscle is the organ of life. So I have both sides of the coin. To be honest, I have no idea who's right. So I just try to balance it, man. Mm-hmm. I try to incorporate fasting often, but I do eat quite a bit of meat. Like, and I think meat is healthy, provided it's coming from a good source. So again, there's an argument against vegetables. There's an argument against meat. The answer lies somewhere in the middle, as always. Too much of anything is not good. So again, fasting 1 to 2 times a week to make sure you're getting the autophagy, making sure you're drinking tons of water to help support detoxification, you're getting your saunas, you're getting your cold exposures, all these things, they're going to get, you know, the typical longevity protocols, right? I think that's all very relevant, regardless if you're a bodybuilder or not. If you're looking to live as long as possible, don't become a bodybuilder. And that's one of the reasons why I left. But again, you know, as far as ongoing, is training in any way going to take away from your life? No way. There's no way.
Yeah.
But except if you're doing it to the extreme that I was, right? Still, even me right now, I'm sitting around 255, 260. It's still too big. Like, I want to get down to 240. It's crazy though, man. My perception of reality is completely skewed. Like, I'm 260 and I see myself in pictures and I'm like, oh, I'm still bigger than most humans, but I feel like a shrimp. Because I mean, for 20 years of my life, I was.
Yeah, you're a big guy, man.
Yeah, it's funny.
Cool. So a good answer. Can vegetarians build and have explosive strength as well? Like, I know there's a lot of arguments. There was a documentary that came out, Game Changers. A lot of like back and forth on that.
Oh, get me started on the Game Changers, man.
I didn't know there's debates on Joe Rogan. They had those guys going back and forth. And as a vegetarian, sometimes I question. I know there's like, for personally, like there's some ethical things and, you know, just in the back of my mind is the reason why. But then, you know, as my kids as vegetarians, I question, am I robbing them of some nutrients that they need to grow fully and yep. You know, to have like a lot of strength and like all these things. So I'm supplementing now, but just your opinion on maybe even seeing people in the bodybuilding game. Do you see a lot of vegetarians? Probably not a lot, but
not a lot. No. So, and again, I would talk to Zach about it. So get him on your podcast. So I think he does feed his kids vegetarian. And I would disagree with that completely, man, because there's so many vital nutrients that kids need to grow mentally and physically. Again, at least up until they're 16 to 18, their brain, you know, if you're not supplementing with choline, you're not supplementing with zinc, like something you got to supplement with. And then you ask yourself, are those as effective as getting them from meat or getting them from organ meat or like getting them from you know, oysters or something like that? Like probably not. So again, for yourself, I think veganism is interesting, man. Like at some point in my life, I will experience.
I'm vegetarian. I'll go vegan. Like, I don't like saying go vegan because vegans will say then you're not vegan, but I do the vegan. So no cheese or meat, no cheese or eggs every once in a while, but I've been no meat, fish for like 10 years plus now.
And if you look
feel
great.
Good. I feel good. Great. Yeah. Feel great.
Have you had your blood done in a long time?
Yeah. Blood's good. The only thing was B12 was low a little while ago when I wasn't supplementing. So I supplement that now, but I feel really good. My blood test was the best when I didn't eat for like 50 days. That's when I had like the best.
You didn't eat anything for 50 days?
Just was doing a little bit of grape juice, dry fasting. And I lost a lot of weight. I looked really skinny and my wife's like, you're going to die. Go to the doctor. So I got my blood checked.
Hold on. Then 50 days, just a little bit. No water either.
I would drink no water. I drink grape juice during, I would be dry fasting, and then I have a window of grape juice drinking. So like a grape juice cleanse, and I would go like 4 or 5 days dry fasting in a row throughout the whole thing. So I'd like drink a bit, then take 4 or 5 days off. It was a crazy experience, like mental, spiritual.
Oh, hell yeah.
I got 55, I think is where we capped out. But when I got my blood test, the only thing they saw was ketones in my urine. Everything else was like perfect. Like you're like totally healthy. One of the healthiest blood work we've seen. What are you doing? I'm like, yeah, I'm starving myself to death. They're like, yeah, you look like it. But
how much weight did you lose?
I lost 40 pounds from 185. Wow. So I was down to like 145. I looked so skinny. I'll send you some pictures later. You can see. Wow. But I felt amazing. Like the mental clarity was just like.
Well, it's ketones, like, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe.
Wow. For sure.
But you see the mind unravel too, and the addictions to food and the emotional attachment to all that stuff. Like as the weeks go on, you start letting go of that. And then when I was deep into that fast, I just really like, I felt like as my body was cleaning itself out and like obviously like all of like the dead cells were getting like weaker cells were getting removed. Immediately I needed to organize my environment. So like all the drawers in my life were like organized, cleaned, anything that wasn't necessary got thrown out. My computer files, I was like I would never clean my computer system, like just files everywhere, cleaning it. My desktop was clean. And I just realized my whole environment now had to be clean because I was cleaning the inside. And it was this really, really interesting experience. Wow. Anyways, went a bit of a tangent there. So, okay.
Dude, I'm interested in that. So what initiated that?
My wife was in a Facebook group that was taking pictures of their crap and their eyes were changing colors and they were losing all this weight, but they were healing from cancer and crazy diseases and all this stuff. She's like, you gotta check this out. And I'm like, I don't want to see that crap. And eventually I looked into it, and all of a sudden, like, this curiosity, like, you know, when you feel that sort of like real pull to something, I just felt it. And I was like, okay, I'm going to try this. And I reached out to the guy who created it. He was doing 108 days. This is the Master Fast. And I got a podcast coming out with him. And he ended up living in Woodbridge, where I live. And I was like, wow. I went to go, actually, my wife's maid of honor was his first cousin, believe it or not. So like, I ended up going to see him. We talked about it. I said, okay, I'm going to try this. And it was this crazy experience of like just really pushing yourself past your comfort zone and like going off into that sort of experience.
So your wife didn't do it with you?
No. She 2 days without eating and she'll kick my ass to completely like rip my head off. But I remember reading a lot of, when I was really reading like a lot of the philosophical, like religious texts and stuff, they all talk about these long fasts and how it would create this connection. I was like, okay, I want to see what's there. And so I got a glimpse of that. And now like, even when I do like dry fasting, extended dry fasts, you really start pushing yourself into that zone of like just really feeling super connected. So my next sort of like experience I'm looking towards like a dark retreat. And then I want to combine a dark retreat, like, so like 6 or 7 days of complete darkness with like a dry fast, like combine the two together and see what happens. So yeah, masochistic mindset of just really giving myself, like throwing myself into the fire. But that's when I usually like have the biggest breakthroughs
Everyone has the biggest breakthroughs, yeah. But it's so hard to curate those things in life, right? So dude, that's interesting. I've never heard of anyone doing a 50-day dry fast. I would be very curious.
So it wasn't dry the whole time. It wasn't dry the whole time. Right. There was juice in between. So it was like periods of
no water.
No water. No water. Yeah, it's just some grape juice.
What's the reasoning behind the grape juice?
It's very cleansing. So if you just drank grape juice for 2 or 3 days, you would like clear your whole system out. Even if just Welch's, like, there's something about the Concord grapes that are just like very, very cleansing. I don't know if it's the tannins. I don't know what it is in there. They just
is that an Italian wives' tale or what?
Maybe there's you can look it up online. There's been grape fasts and grape juice fasts for a while. So it's all out there. Yeah,
dude, I don't know. I'd love to do that, but that would be the type of thing where that's why I asked if your wife was doing it. But type of thing of your environment, like there's got to be unconscious programming that makes you like reach for food when it's sitting on the counter. Did you ever experience that?
Dude, when I was like, just your smell, your sense of smell, like I could so taste, hyped. I could taste food through my nose. Like you could just like taste it.
Yeah.
So it was also like a self-discipline thing. Like anytime I could easily just pick up a food and eat. There's no one stopping me, but full meals in front of me with the family, I still sit down for dinner. You know, dreaming about eating or like, you know, just interesting things come up and you just start seeing this addiction to food. It took me 3 weeks to stop thinking about food 24/7. For the first 3 weeks, all I thought about, what's the first thing I'm going to eat, how good it's going to taste, the texture. The first thing I ate, it was like a psychedelic experience. I ate a fully ripened papaya, and I don't even really love papayas, but it was there, and I was like, okay, let's do it. The texture was like, it was a 3D. Yeah. It was crazy. Yeah.
So, I mean, not to that level, but as a bodybuilder, there was times when I was so depleted that like the sweetness of a potato just blew my mind. And like, I wasn't allowed to have carrots. So when I would have a carrot, it was like, this is the most amazing flavor. I think everyone should go through some type of restriction from food. And like boiled chicken tasted so amazing to me. Like I wasn't eating salt. I wasn't eating anything for such a long time at one point in my career. And man, a sweet potato to me was like heaven. And now people are like, oh man, I need to go to McDonald's to get some satisfaction from my food. I'm like, God, you just need to do some restrictions.
Yeah. And I think one thing is that people, like you said earlier, it's just like they're eating on the go. They're rushing. Mm-hmm. They're eating. They don't really spend the time to savor their food, chew it slowly, appreciate every bite and like the amazing taste and flavors that we have where, you know, then you really realize when you don't have it for a while, what you're actually experiencing when you do it. So it's conscious awareness, eating and I think that will help the whole digestive process too, because you're really grateful for what you're putting in your body and it'll
change your perspective on consumerism. I'm curious, because like we're such a consumerist.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So around the same time I watched Minimalism, the documentary. Have you seen that?
No.
Oh, you gotta watch it. These guys just start getting rid of all their shit. And then that's what me was like, okay, I want to start getting rid of all my stuff. I'm fasting. I don't need anything. I can like minimal life. And these guys talk about as they get rid of more and more of their stuff, they feel better and better and just clear and I can feel that. It's like I have so much crap that I don't need at all. And it's just like it's something sitting in the back of your subconscious mind. It's like these things that are just littering your environment. So my plan is when I go to Costa Rica.
I literally have 12 black t-shirts. Yeah, I have 12 black t-shirts, 12 white t-shirts. That's it.
There you go.
Keep it simple.
Yeah. Yeah, so there you go. So
when you go to Costa Rica, you're gonna do what?
I'm packing like nothing. I'm just really gonna go light. I'm not gonna bring anything down there, so just to be there and be present with that, and not, I'll bring my computer because I gotta get some work done, but trying to move more into that direction with my life, I think, yeah, it will help. And I see a lot of people that do live a simple way and seem to, really, really live by that. So we'll
So,
see.
Matt, I think COVID was a blessing. So, when I came back, so right before COVID, I was actually in Bali and I was coming back to Tampa and I didn't have a place to live. So, I was literally no place to live. I was like, I gotta find a place to live. Because I knew COVID was happening, I ended up signing a lease from Bali for a place in Tampa. I had never seen it, but I bought it based on proximity because it was right across from a park and my kids wanted this park. I was like, all right, I'm getting that place because my kids can go play at the park. And I get back, and I think it was like March 1st, March 7th, I think I got back. And everything was closed. So I had no furniture. I had two suitcases, and that was it. I didn't have a bed. No shit. I had nothing. And I'm like, I'm not like a, like I felt like a college student. But dude, I'll tell you, it was the most liberating 4 to 6 weeks of my life. Eventually I got like a couch and I got a bed and I bought them off like Facebook Marketplace. And I'm like, hey man, the stores are closed. I'm not going to go buy something that's extravagant if I can't go see it. So I'm like, I'm just gonna literally, I'm like sleeping on a mattress on the floor, brother, like for 3 months. And it was liberating. I was like, man, I
Wow.
realize how little I need.
You really
And
need, yeah.
yeah. And what I had on my floor, those chairs that I got, that like the ones you have in your office. Yeah,
These ones
exactly.
here?
I'm just sitting on right now.
The lucid beanbag chairs,
That
yeah.
was literally all I had. And I was sitting on that thing. I was doing my meditations on there, doing my reading and my working on there. I had nothing,
Nice.
man. It was so
Nice.
liberating. I thought it was
Nice.
amazing and honestly inspired me. And now recently I've been realizing like, man, I'm getting like packages here every day. I got all this shit I don't want. My life is getting hectic. I was like, I got to get rid of it all. It's time to move again.
Cool. You have to move somewhere. Move to Costa Rica. Get a place before you go. Bring two packs,
I
suitcase.
told you, I've been looking, man. I've been looking at beachfront property down there. Again, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I think there's certainly a shift on the horizon, especially with the climate in the US right now.
Yeah.
Man, like my kids are in Tampa because that's where their mother is. So it's, I don't know, I'm kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, but we'll see.
I know we only got about 7 or 8 minutes left. There was a couple of questions I want to ask. I'm sure we can do another podcast in the future, but I want to talk to you about homeschooling and you're homeschooling your kids. I think we should finish this. We might not even have enough time, but we'll dive a bit into it because I've been curious about that. We've been thinking about making a move to Costa Rica or at least part time, and there's this big fear about what am I going to do with my kids? Pull them out of school. A lot of people are afraid to put their kids back in school now because of this whole COVID
Ask
thing.
yourself this question, G. I'm going to ask you this. When your kids are 18 years old, let's fast forward 10 years, right? Your kids are 18 years old. What would make you happy as a dad? What would make you feel fulfilled? What characteristics, what life traits, what do you want them to have when they're 18 years old? Now, do you want them to have a very high grade in high school, or do you want them to have great personal skills, or do you want them to be great human beings, being thoughtful, being loving? Like, and I'm not putting anything in your eyes, but or in your ears, but I want you to literally sit down and think about this. Like, who do I want my kids to be? If I could empower them with experiences, with love, with curiosity, with what kind of characteristics would I want them to embody in 10 years from now? And I guarantee you, nowhere on that list is it going to say I want them to get a 95 degree or 95
Yeah.
average in high school. Nowhere. Because I don't know how you did in high school, but I shit the bed in high school and university. And I'm relatively successful by most people's measure post that stuff, right? Like, I had zero interest in that stuff. But what I became in the process was happy, was confident, was curious. So my goal with my children, just to answer this, is I want to create amazing human beings who have a positive attitude and a general curiosity for everything in life. Because that's what allows me to pursue things with so much intent and purpose. I wake up every day with passion and purpose because I'm curious about, I want to do this, I want to learn this, I want to get more. I'm always just like wanting to learn and consume because I have this amazing curiosity. So as a business owner, you'll get this, and this is how I approach it. If someone walks into my office and they've got an amazing university degree, but they're an asshole, versus someone who's got no experience or no grades, but they're an amazing human being with a great attitude and a can-do attitude, who are you hiring?
Oh, we don't even ask for resumes. We just
Right.
like set intentions. Like, what's the type of person we want to
That's it.
attract? And yeah, strictly on the feel. Like, yeah, and that's where I'm too. And it's interesting because I have the opposite experience in high school. amazing grades, got into a business, really good business school at Schulich. You were in Toronto, so it was a New York business school.
Yeah.
And I got there and I was like, this is not for me. Like, like I don't want to work for a corporation. I want to work, you know, be an entrepreneur. And it's just right after, like, brought my tax and law and business accounting textbooks, just returned them and finished with a marketing general business degree at Schulich and went straight into like being an entrepreneur and just beating myself up there because I was still focused on money, wanting to make money, not really finding my passion until about 10 years later, and all the ups and downs of learning through mistakes. But yeah, going back, it's like, you know, I'd rather my kids have these experiences and good emotional intelligence. I guess the one question is the social aspect. And that's what my wife sort of thinks, like, about like friends and being interacting with other kids, you know, like what's that been? How's that been for you homeschooling your kids?
So my kids are very athletic. So my son plays hockey. He does jiu-jitsu. He does Muay Thai. He does gymnastics. My daughter does, and baseball. My daughter does jiu-jitsu, Muay Thai, gymnastics, dance, singing. So that they get interactions. And you do, honestly, if you curate your environment in such a way where you move somewhere where there's kids around, and kids are pretty simple, man. As long as they got one, two, or three friends and like they can connect with, they're happy, man.
Yeah.
They're super happy. And you'd be surprised. And again, it's just your expectations and your beliefs, right? Like, as long as you're close to your kids and you're able to connect with
and
them.
And that's what's more important to me is like, they're in some school with some teacher that doesn't really care about them. And if I can even be with them a couple hours a day and my wife can be with them a couple hours a day and, you know, like teach them things that they're interested in. Like you were mentioning earlier, like both your kids learn totally different. And the way one learns is different from the way the other one learns. But in a class, they'll have to learn one way, you know, and kids get put in these boxes. Oh, this guy's a behavior. This guy has ADHD. Maybe it's just because they don't resonate with that style of learning. We shouldn't label them as good, bad, or whatever.
Right. And my kids get to choose their topics. And then like, hey, we get to pick one family trip a year. And like last year, they wanted to go to Australia. We're like, all right, let's go to Australia. So we spend a month learning about Australia. And this year, maybe we're going to do a month in Costa Rica. And let's spend a month learning about Costa Rica. And so we'll learn about the culture. We'll learn about the geography. And they'll go experience it. And I think the beautiful thing is, especially in North America, there's this fear-based reality that exists where people are afraid of everything outside of themselves, right? So I don't want to go to the Middle East because I'm afraid of what's going on over there. I don't want to go to off the US right now. People don't want to go to the US because they're afraid. And I think what's going on right now is even perpetuating it further. Like think about, hey, your kids can't go to school now. They're going to learn online and everyone you see is going to have a mask on. So how are you going to have any social skills as a child? It's next to impossible. So 10 years from now, fast forward, now everyone's completely disconnected. There's huge amounts of fear. People sit at home behind their computer. They become recluse, and all they want to do is eat and spend money. It's driving the economy, but it's creating more disconnection amongst people, right? Mm-hmm. So again, hopefully people realize that that's a potential. Again, I'm not saying it's the reality, but it's potential of what could happen because of this. So we have to intentionally pay attention. Like, no, I want my kids to be social. I want them to engage. I want them to be loving, caring human beings who aren't afraid of going to places because if they think that there's something, those people are different. Mm-hmm. Yes, they may be different, but they're still human beings just like you. And they probably have very similar values to what you do.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And remember, and I'll just close on this. One time at a food show years back when I was doing, it was really heavy in the food business. I met a guy from Costa Rica. He invented this thing called the Bripe. It's a brew pipe he makes espresso in the jungle. And it was interesting. And he starts telling me a story how he left California and moved his whole family down to Costa Rica in the jungle because he realized that his kids were just getting conditioned by this system to be, you know, like mindless sort of robots. And he left high paying job. And I looked him up the other day because I didn't go find him and thank him. And he looked me in the eyes and he goes, if your kids go through the school system and become robots, it's on you because they have no choice right now. They're trusting in you. And this is up to you. And you're the only one who could save them. And me thinking about that, my wife is a teacher in the school system. I have all these businesses in Toronto that I can't leave. And I'm like, how am I ever going to get out of this? Fast forward like 5 years, we're going to Costa Rica for 6 weeks. I don't know what's going to happen, but you know, we're almost there. So
dude, I'm going to take that clip. I'm going to blow up your face. I'm going to put it on social media. I'm going to drive ads to it. And I'm going to say, seriously, I'm going to say, if your kids go through this system, it's on you. I'm going to make that an ad on my Facebook.
Oh my God. And I'm going to go thank him because that was the reality check that I needed. And I'm going to get his name and I'm going to try to get him on the podcast too. So I know you got to go. So quick, tell people where they can get a hold of you if they want to follow you, connect with you.
If everyone likes the podcasts, Muscle Intelligence Podcast is my podcast. And we don't talk just about muscle. It's everything to do with living your greatest life in a body that you love. And I think connecting with your body is an important piece of spirituality as well. And again, I don't necessarily perpetuate everyone. body, whatever works for you, turn it into a mindful endeavor and be the best that you can. Muscleintelligence.com is another place you can find me. And Instagram is just BPAK Fitness, BPAK Fitness.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much for tuning into this podcast. Check out Ben. He's doing great work. Send him some love. Ben, thank you very much for your time. Appreciate you as a human being. Keep up the great work, and I hope to see you in Costa Rica very soon.
Likewise, brother. I'm grateful to be here, and I will definitely see you in Costa Rica soon.
Okay. Thanks. Peace.